Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio for a Thursday. Got an exciting show for you today. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. I have an interesting guest for you today, folks. We've got a guest by the name of Ann Johnson. You might recognize her maybe from Broadway. You might recognize her from movies. You might recognize her from a stage show, maybe from singing. Maybe you recognize her as a psychic reader. Maybe you've sat down in front of her. She's got a brand new book called Facing Forward, a memoir about choices, intuition, and insight in a show-busy life. We're going to sit down and talk to her today about her life. And we're going to talk about your intuition and how your intuition can get you ahead in life. I want to welcome in today to Darkness Radio, Ann Johnson. Ann, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on, hon.
And you've had such a wonderful, rich life in which, according to your book and the way you've put it, you've let your intuition guide you in so many different ways. And I want to start out by asking you, did you more or less let your intuition guide you, or did you take and put a lot of serious thought into what you were doing too? Because going through your book, it seems like you did put some thought into your career as well.
Well, yes. I kept trying things that came in front of me, new things. Like I wrote in the book about the fact that I had been singing in nightclubs, and how I really became a psychic is that my agent for the nightclub said to me, I have a booking for somebody who's a psychic, but I don't have anybody around. And he said, I was just thinking if you want to try it and see how it feels to do it, because you have good intuition, you might take the job. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'll try it. And then my good friend, her name was Verushka, she was telling me, you should do this, you should do it. And I said, can I use your name? And she said, yes. So I took the name Verushka, and I had a sign made and everything. And my first job was at the Plaza Hotel. And believe it or not, the name, I think, is what really sold me on people coming over for a reading. They loved the name. And I found out that I could do it when I tried it. And that's really where my intuition played a big part, because I had been a nightclub singer, and when he said to me, do you want to try something new, see how you feel about it, well, it took off like wildfire. Mm-hmm. And every big agency that booked parties hired me, and I was working constantly, and that's how that's when my intuition really played a big part right there.
Now, Annie, let me talk a little bit about your early life. Let's start off and tell people a little bit about you growing up. Now, things happened for you quite quickly and quite fast as far as entertainment went when you were young. Tell people a little bit about your mother and father and how you came up in the entertainment business, really when you were quite young.
Yes, I was a baby, actually. My mother was a vaudevillian. She played for vaudevillians like Sammy Davis. And I used to have to go with them because I travel with my parents. And I was in the show business cycle because of my mother. And she was a great entertainer. And then I wound up having, I was studying dance very young also. And I was really good at it. And everybody was always asking me if I could stand in for the teacher and help her out. When I was like 10 and 12 years old, they're asking me this. So when I was 14, I started my own dance studio.
Oh, wow.
And that worked out great. My dad turned the den into a dance studio. And I had 60 kids a week who paid me $2 a lesson.
Oh, wow.
So it was a terrific start for me. I did that till the end of high school. And then I started singing, and I was always good at singing. Mm-hmm. And I was singing like in school and everything, and I was good. And so I started singing, and I wound up joining a singing act, two guys. And I also replaced Ann Margaret when she was tired of singing with the band. Wow. And I replaced her, and then I decided I didn't like singing with the band either. So I joined these two guys singing, and my parents were afraid that I was going to marry one of them, and I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so they shipped me off to New York, and they put me in a Broadway show because my aunt was an agent of very famous people, and they put me in a show. That's how I got to New York, and I loved it when I got here. I still love it.
And Aunt Doris, you talk about Aunt Doris in the book, and Aunt Doris really had the connections, didn't she?
Well, she was George Gobel's manager, mm-hmm. Yes. She had a lot of connections, and that's how I wound up getting into the theater. And then I really loved the nightclub world better than anything else, and I worked on having an act, and I did my act, and I opened for Dangerfield, and I played all the big clubs around, and then, of course, they all closed.
Yeah.
And it was very, it's like there's one club around now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really someplace you care about being, or it matters, you know?
You know, I actually have an interesting story for you about George Gobel. When I was young, my grandfather, who's now unfortunately passed away, was the spitting image of George Gobel. And George,
oh my God.
George used to come to Minneapolis and participate in a Duffy Celebrity Golf Tournament. And so my grandfather would go up, his name was Roy Dennis, would go up, and he was a very friendly gentleman. He would go up and make friends with just about anybody. So he would go up and he would shake hands with George Gobel, and George would laugh and say, "It's like looking in a mirror." Well, people would go up to my grandfather and say, "George, will you sign this for me?" And he would say, no, I'm not George Gobel. Well, depending on the year and the mood, my grandfather every once in a while would just say, "Oh, here," and he'd sign it and hand it to him. Well, he would walk up to George and say, "You know, George, you know, I've done half the work for you." Just kiddingly, he'd say, "I've done half the work for you. Would you give me half your pay?" And George would bust out laughing and say, "Roy," because they'd get on a first name basis after a while. He'd say, "Roy, you know what? If you'll sign all my autographs, I'll give you all my pay." So it
That's
was
cute.
It was pretty funny. So I just
very cute.
I got a nice warm feeling reading your book and seeing that George Gobel was such a huge part of your life. I thought that was just so neat.
Well, he was in the beginning of my life, you
yes.
know, because
yeah.
I was in that show with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It brought kind of a neat little remembrance of my grandfather there as well. So just had to tip my cap to you in just that neat little memory there. So Aunt Doris also got you. So she got you into the Broadway part of things. Did she also get you singing acts as well?
Not really. She got me in with those two guys that were singing, and
okay.
then after that, she decided I should go to New York, and I loved it. I'll never forget the first day I arrived to go to the theater, which was on 49th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking on the street, and I said, "This is where I'm meant to be." And I was dressed in a very beautiful violet linen suit and high heels that matched. And I felt so happy there. And I just felt like I fit in. That's where I belong, New York. And that's how I still feel about it, actually, if you want to know the truth. I love it here.
I bet. I'm more of a New York versus California person myself, although I'm in the Midwest. I've been to both places numerous times, and I kind of vibe with the New York vibe more than California itself. Let me ask you this.
Well, I do too, and I lived in California too, and I'll just say this to you, that mm-hmm. living there was a drag for me because I had to drive everywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you mentioned that a little bit in the book. I was gonna ask you a little bit about California because I know you spent some time in California with your career, and you have the preference of New York over California. Let me ask you this, because you have spent time on stage. And you've spent time dealing with the movie industry as well. What do you prefer? Do you prefer singing, acting? Which is better for you?
Singing. I love singing. It's my favorite thing.
Now, nightclubs or more of a concert vibe? Which one would you prefer?
No, I like nightclubs, and I liked it because of the interaction I had with people. And I used to work at Rodney Dangerfield's, and he used to always ask for me because he said, Annie, I'll get the audience involved. And that's what I did. When I was performing, I'd always talk to the audience and get their names. In fact, I have a cute story. I'm not sure it's in my book, but it might be. When I was in Las Vegas, I happened to go to see Debbie Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And when I went to her show, she started from the back of the audience. The music played and kept playing, and she walked through the audience and shook people's hands and got their names. And then when she got on stage, she talked about the people that she had met also while she was doing her act. And I had been doing my act also at that time, but I never tried doing what she did. And I played the Pocono Mountains a week or so after that. Mm-hmm. And when I did it, I got a standing ovation.
Wow.
I did that, the same thing. I walked through the audience saying hello to people and asking their names and, you know, whatever, that kind of thing.
Now, what's interesting here, Anne, is a lot of psychics and mediums that I've talked to over the years have told me that there's times where they feel like they need that break or that boundary from dealing with the public or dealing with people. Now, from talking to you off air and from reading your book, I get the feeling that you're very much a people person. You talk about how you like to live in apartments versus houses. Like you like to be near people. Why is it that you don't seem to need that break, that you need to be almost near people? Why is that?
Well, I like the involvement with people. I like to say what's up, what's happening, what's going on. Like, I came up from downstairs just now, mm-hmm. talking to my desk man, mm-hmm. and we're talking about, you know, how everything is, or the weather's bad, you know, when are we going to get spring? It's just like that. I just like to have that interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I get a break from people. I don't have people around me all day in the apartment. You know, I get a break, but I can go out to the store, which is across the street where I was, and I'm talking to the pharmacist, and she's giving me information I needed to know, which is great. I love it. You know, and earlier I went down to get some food that I'm going to share with some people later. And I went down to get it, and the guy in the place is asking me how I'm doing and all that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I like that feeling.
Do you feel like interaction with people recharges you rather than drains you?
Of course. It doesn't drain me to be with people, no. I love it.
Why do you feel that some psychics and mediums have that feeling that they're being drained almost by people when they're working with them? Why is their battery not being recharged?
Well, maybe they just don't like the people they're working with, or they don't enjoy what they're doing. I don't know.
Huh. Okay. It seems curious to me because I think I'm a lot like you are at times. I get recharged sometimes by dealing with certain people or being around certain people. The act of giving to people recharges me, you know, the act of seeing people lit up with joy and that recharges me. That gives me a charge.
Well, I felt that about you when I talked to you the other day.
Yeah.
I felt that about you, that you're a people person. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I don't
see in people if they come to my house for a reading, I can tell them when I meet them about them. How they are, who they are, what they are. Yeah. And I could tell that about you right away.
Yeah. And I don't get, sometimes, you know, I talk to some people who have the gift, I'll put it that way. And they, they say, well, you know, I need that break. I just need to get away. And I think, well, why are you in that business if, you know you're going to be immersed in your subject? You know, you're if you're not dealing with the living, then certainly the dead are going to come to you and they're going to tell you, well, I need to get involved here. I need to talk to somebody on the living side, and I need to, you know, I need to get a hold of somebody. You're always dealing with people on one side or the other. So to me, it would seem like if you're in that business, you're going to be involved. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to me, it just, it seems like, well, if you're not, you know, if you're not ready for that kind of rush, I don't know that that's kind of the business for you. I tell you what, let's do this. And when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about intuition, because this book does talk a lot about intuition and steering your life with intuition. A lot of us say, you know what, I don't have a psychic bone in my body, but I feel like I know people when they come up to me, or I have a good gut sense about people. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what it is we do to drive ourselves with intuition, and how do we know that we're going in the right path or the right direction? I want to talk about career. I want to talk about love. And I want to talk about how do we know when it comes to different situations. So we'll do that when we come back. Our guest is Ann Johnson. The book is Facing Forward. It's a great book, folks. And I tell you, I spent some time with it. You get to know Ann very well in this book. Facing Forward, a memoir about choices, intuition, and insight in a show-busy life. And let me tell you, Anne has had a show busy life. There's lots of great adventures to read about that Anne's had in her life. We'll talk a little bit about some of those adventures when we come back. Again, Anne Johnson is our guest, and we'll talk about some of those adventures when we come back. You're listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is psychic, medium, I guess we could say show business extraordinaire. Would that be a good way of putting it, Anne? Because you cover so many different areas in show business. We'll put it that way. Yeah, we'll put it that way. Author Anne Johnson, and her book is Facing Forward, a memoir about choices, intuition, and insight in a show-busy life. We have a link to it in the description of this podcast. Now, one of the main things in that title of the book there, Anne, is intuition. And we talk a lot about, for those of us who say we're not psychic or don't have that psychic bone in our body, as we say, we like to think that we have a good sense of intuition. A lot of people walk around and say, you know what, I may not be psychic, but I have that intuition. I know when someone's about to get me. Let's talk about that first. A lot of people like to think that I know when someone's about to get me. I know when someone has bad intentions for me. When we're walking around in our everyday life, what's a good way to know if someone has bad intentions about you? How can we kind of keep that radar about us? Because it seems like in today's day and times, people aren't as honest as they used to be, and they might have bad intentions for you. It seems like everyone's got a hustle or a swindle going on these days. How do we protect ourselves more in today's society?
I don't know. I think you just have to go along with how you feel. That's the main thing, is going along with what you feel.
Is it?
You know, you can't really protect yourself from what having, you know, somebody who's going to, who cares about you a certain way or doesn't care.
Does it?
You can't really protect yourself about from that. You have to go along with what's going on.
Does it,
you know,
help? Does it help to be in a relationship with somebody who's more street smart and can help you navigate life? Or is it just easier to be more open and, you know, kind of have your eyes open to things? And when I say open,
I think it's both.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, both. You can be in a relationship with someone who's street smart. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'll give you a good example, and I'll hit close to home here. My mom likes to think she's street smart because she's a former drug and alcohol counselor, and dealt with a lot of and worked in downtown Minneapolis. Worked for an organization that had a lot of gang members in it. But boy, she could get hustled real quick. I mean, she just could.
She can what?
She could get hustled real quick. So, you know, she would never see it coming. Like us kids could put one over on her real easy, you know. But it's because she had that bravado that she worked with these people that we could put one over on her. She would never see it coming from her own children, you know. Let's talk about when it comes to love and intuition and trying not to get fooled by love. A lot of us get into bad relationships.
That's true.
Yes. And a lot of us would like to think maybe we could get lucky on the first try. That almost never happens, does it, Anne?
Well, it depends on, you know, what you're looking for in life.
True. Very
true. Are you looking for a partner that's there for you? Or are you looking for just a person to go out with or have fun? If you're looking for a real down to earth person, you have to go for that. You have to look for that. Mm-hmm. Can't be just, you know, dating anybody.
True.
If you want to look for somebody that's really in your corner, it's important to do that.
I know you talk in the book about finding men that you really connected with, that you almost connected on a soul level with.
That's right. Exactly. Yes.
Are you a huge believer in not only the soulmate, but in the twin flame phenomena?
I think when you meet somebody, you kind of know if they're right.
Okay.
I think you know it when you meet them.
You brought up, I believe with, I don't remember if it's with Steve, your hubby you're with now. I don't remember if you said it, you believe you were with him in a past life. Was it him? Do you believe in past lives?
No, I think it was somebody else.
Okay. Do you believe, first of all, in past lives? And do you believe that?
Yes.
Do you believe any of your spouses that you were with them in past lives?
It feels that way, that I knew them before. You know?
Uh-huh.
One of them, I felt like I knew him before, like he had just been in my life, you know, came back to cheer me up.
Oh, okay. Have you ever been able to do a past life regression, either by yourself or with another regressionist?
No, I really don't do that.
Okay.
I don't do it.
You don't do that? Okay. You've never been curious as to whether you've had one or not?
No, I'm sure I did.
Okay.
I actually, you want to know something funny?
Sure.
When I went to visit New Mexico, or no, Santa Fe, yeah, Santa Fe. When I went to Santa Fe and the Indian market and all the beautiful things they have there, I bought some gorgeous stuff that I have in my apartment here. And I met a lot of people, and I met a couple of Indian chiefs, and they say that they never invite you to their place. And I met ones that did. And I knew that I had been there before.
Hmm. Interesting.
And they say they never invite you to come to their reservation. And I had an invitation.
Very.
So I knew that I had been an American Indian before.
Oh, wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I also have a very interesting question too, Anne. In all the different theaters you've performed in, and all the different nightclubs you've performed in, have you ever had an encounter with a spirit or a ghost?
No.
Okay.
No.
Interesting. All right. In those nightclubs and venues that you've performed in, have you ever felt like maybe you were there in a past life?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay. Interesting. All right.
The only place I ever felt that was there in Santa Fe.
In Santa Fe. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting indeed.
Yeah.
Let's get back to intuition. I want to get back to the career aspect of intuition. Like I said before, it seemed like going through the book, it seemed like there were a lot of times where you made blatant choices, but other times it really did seem like intuition pushed you to make decisions. And a lot of times when you used intuition and strong intuition, it pushed you not only to the right decision, but it pushed you to decisions that really sprung you forward. Can you give me a couple of examples of times where intuition really just pushed you not only ahead, but ahead to a really fortunate decision that really got you ahead?
Well, my decision not to be a movie star was a very big thing. I had had an agent, and I was invited to meet the head of a big studio. And I went to that person's office and met the person in the studio, the head of the studio. I won't name who that is. And then I said, okay, great. And he said, you know, I'm going to help you, but somebody's going to think you're my girlfriend because I'm helping you. So just be aware that they're going to think that of me. But I have four kids, and I don't fool around, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That was in California. I was in New York with somebody from that same studio who knew that person. And we went out to dinner, this other guy and I. It was nice. We had a good time. He said, let's go back and see so-and-so at his place and just say hello. I said, okay. And that was the guy that in California told me that he didn't fool around, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the apartment where the guy that didn't fool around had. And he came in with a girlfriend, and he called me into the back room, and he said, I'm with my girlfriend, and we both like you, and we want you to come out with us. And I said, thank you very much. Do you have a contract in your pocket?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yikes.
And I said, that's it. No, it's not for me.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And that's not the only time I had that kind of thing.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is somebody who swore to me they didn't fool around, and everybody would think I was his girlfriend because he helped me and all that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Pretty crazy, right?
That is pretty crazy. One of the things I got to tell you, I absolutely admire about you, Anne, is you. You know, you always took the straight and narrow in your career. You always were upstanding, and you always worked very hard.
Yeah, I worked hard. I really worked hard.
And
I'm still dancing, by the way.
Wow.
I still go to dance. Sure. I go to dance class on Saturday.
Really?
To the famous, which he's in my book, the guy Luigi.
Uh-huh.
He's his partner teaches now. No, he's no longer around.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the famous founder of jazz. Luigi Jazz. And
jeez.
I go to his class usually on Saturday.
Now, okay, now I got to ask you, because I myself have a lot of physical maladies, as people who listen to the show know. A lot of things, you know, that would keep me from dancing, I'll put it that way. But it's not polite for a gentleman to ask a lady's age, but I got to ask, is it a little tougher to dance now than it was then? Because in the book, you say that the Luigi Jazz dance program was helping people with their backs and to recuperate.
Yes.
from major injuries.
Yeah, it is.
So
it's basically, he was somebody who had a very bad accident, and then he became a teacher after he found out the things that would help him.
So what exactly does it do? Is it strengthening the core, or what is it doing?
Well, it's the way the stretches are set up, you know?
Uh-huh.
If you go on his site, Luigi Jazz Center, you can pull up some information about him, and you'll see the kind of dancing that goes on.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, interesting, interesting, interesting. So you do that every Saturday.
He was hurt badly, and he recuperated from it when he was doing the, when he started doing these certain routines that they teach in class.
Huh, okay. All right. Let me bring this back around again to intuition. Now, we're talking about looking and feeling better, and of course, you're dancing every Saturday. But how can we use our intuition to look and feel better at any age?
Well, first of all, I think you have to keep yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to do things like, for women, you know, you've got to keep your nails beautiful. You've got to keep, you know, you have to do things that keep you up. Like, you don't want to look like a hag. You know, I'm thin. I have great looking skin.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep yourself up. All right? Does that make sense?
Sure. Absolutely.
And also, I have a little thing that I feel is important for people. Every day, try to do something different. Try to find something that you haven't done before. Some little thing. You know, no matter what it is in your home, even. If it's cleaning out your dog's toy chest, whatever, anything. Mm-hmm. Just do something you haven't done that makes you feel good that day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's my little word of wisdom, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Try to do something every single day that's different.
Okay.
I try to teach that to my son. It doesn't always work.
By the way, how is your son doing? I know in the book you state that he was born with health problems right off the bat. And why don't you tell our listeners?
He was. He's doing great. No, he has no problems now.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners what JJ was up against when he was born?
Well, he had breathing. He had lung problems with his breathing. And he was, you know, he just didn't feel good. He had to go to the hospital. And thank God he went there and they saved his life because he needed special medication. The nanny I had with him told me that he should be in the hospital, and I took him right over because he wasn't breathing right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he has had, but he doesn't have it now. Thank God.
And he was ill throughout his childhood, but again, you were diligent in taking care of him throughout his childhood, and yet still being a single mother and continuing to work and finding ways in the entertainment industry to keep working and adapting your jobs and using intuition to find the right job.
When my husband and I broke up, you've read it in the book about, mm-hmm. I was just up against the wall. I couldn't take it because I wanted to be married and have a family. That's what my life was about.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have been a big movie star, and I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be a mom and have a family. And, my good friend, who I'm in touch with all the time, her picture's in the book, Jean, she said, why don't you come and work for us, and we'll hire you as an assistant producer. And when I went to go to work, I asked my friend, the guy I was going to assist, I said, what do you want me to do? He said, pull your hair back, wear a suit, and bring something to write on, and, you know, look like you're in a business. And I did, and I became his assistant, and we produced like IBM shows, industrial shows. We produced the Pantone film for Pantone. We did film, and then I did a show where I asked him to be my assistant. So I had quite a road with the production work. I loved it.
couple of the things that you worked on, or you put in bids for, were quite impressive as well. You put in a bid for, or you worked on the Beach Boys 25th anniversary, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. And then there was a project for NASA at one point that you were part of 100 different bidders, and you came in second?
Yes, we did. I know.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's impressive as well. I mean, some very impressive projects that you worked on as well behind the scenes.
Yeah, I like that work very much. I like it. But right now I'm interested in doing something else. I want to become a speaker and do TED Talks, and that's my next goal. I'm taking courses with people and talking to people about how I'm going to do it, but I want to talk on intuition, and I'll be able to talk to the audience and get involved with the audience like I like, and talk to people about using their intuition and what it'll do for them.
What exactly, and can intuition do for someone who feels like they don't have an intuitive bone in their body?
Well, nobody feels that way. You always feel something when you're around people. You feel it. You feel something good or bad. You do. You know? I mean, even animals feel it. I'll tell you a funny story.
Okay.
I have a bad right finger. I have some kind of arthritis in my finger. Mm-hmm. And I've been putting like ice packs on it. And my little dog, who is like a kid, he is so worried about my finger. So even the dog has intuition.
Oh, there you go. Now, is that intuition, yeah, or is that just the dog having a sixth sense that maybe we don't have and can actually smell or see something that we can't?
Well, I think if you open your mind up, wherever you go, you can see. You can see. That's the thing that I'm talking about. You can see.
Okay.
You can see what's going on. You can see how people act. You know if they're in the right place or the wrong place, if to how they're treating you, that it's either good or bad.
Okay. Can I ask you for something here, Ann? Because when we got together, there was something here that said that you could provide an instant personality analysis on air for the show host. Do you think you could do that for me?
Oh, you want me to talk about you?
Yeah. I mean, I if you want.
I do.
Okay.
And a great sense of intuition. You do have very good intuition.
Oh.
I will also tell you that I don't want you to do things too quickly, because you do things very fast.
Okay.
And I want you to take a little bit more time and think things through a little bit. I'm not sure about if you're in a relationship right now. But if you are, I want you to take it slowly.
Okay. Interesting.
Does that help?
That does help. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good deal.
I can tell the way you were talking to me yesterday.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Now, when you pick up on things with me, is it the sound of my voice? Is it somebody or like a spirit guide telling you something, or how is it that you pick up a vibe
on
me?
Nobody's telling me anything. I'm feeling it.
Okay.
What I'm feeling when I'm talking to somebody.
Okay.
What I'm feeling.
Interesting. So it's just a feeling you're getting.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Now, you say I'm highly intuitive. Does that mean that there's another psychic gift in there, or is it just an intuition?
Well, I mean, you might be psychic. It doesn't have to go along with intuition or not go along.
Okay.
I mean, do you feel things about people when you see them?
Yeah. Yeah. When I was little,
that's
I used
what
to
being
be
psychic is.
When I was little, I used to be able to tell you who was calling in the telephone.
See? You've got it. You know? What's your sign? Your birth sign?
Virgo.
Okay, you're you're pretty forward with things.
Mm-hmm.
You go with things. You try things. Just be careful not to try too much at one time.
Okay. That tends to trip me up a little bit, trying to do too much at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling, that you try that.
Yeah, I have done that in the past. Is there a danger to people trying to open up to their intuition too quickly, Anne?
No, you just have to go and see how you feel about things. You just play it, you know, one step at a time. Do you have any children?
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah. I do have nieces and nephews I love dearly and spoil like there's no tomorrow.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Are you married?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. That's all right.
In closing here, because I know we're getting short on time, when we're talking about happiness overall, are there things we can do with our intuition to make us happier overall in life?
Well, I think don't do things that are too dangerous. You know?
Okay.
Don't take too many chances. And think about things when they come around. Don't rush. Think about things. Go slowly and try to do things that help you also. That's important.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. Complete sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, the book is out there and available right now. We have a link to it in the description of the show. The book is called Facing Forward, a memoir about choices, intuition, and insight in a show-busy life. I tell you, folks, I've sat down, I've read it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, Anne. It's a great read. And
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you for reading it.
I did, and I tell you, you've had an awesome life, Anne. You've had some great experiences, and I'm glad to say you've still got plenty of life ahead of you and plenty of experiences in front of you. Anne Johnson, thank you
and
so much.
And remember to take things slowly.
I will. I will absolutely take things slowly. I won't go too fast, although I do have a couple of surgeries coming up.
Oh, no. What are you having?
Well, I have a condition called Charcot foot. So it's a diabetic condition. So I have a surgery to flatten that out. And
is it in your feet?
Yeah, my right foot. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go slowly. Yeah.
Yep. And then I do have some back and neck stuff I have to have done, and I should be getting a gastric sleeve surgery next year. So.
A what?
Gastric sleeve surgery, bariatric surgery.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So, got a lot to do.
Well, if you ever want to call me when we're not on the air and talk to me, you do that, okay?
We'll do. Anne Johnson, thank you so much for being on our program today.
Thank you. Thank you for being so a very easy person to talk to.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, and we very much appreciate you, and good luck going forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope to meet you. Let me know if you come to New York.
Most definitely. We got to go check out a Knicks game.
Oh, yeah. They won last night. Did you watch it?
I didn't. I didn't have a chance to check it out last night. I was reading the book.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're going to be playing again in a couple days.
There you go. Well, we'll check out a Knicks game when I'm in New York. So there you go.
Okay, hon.
All right. Anne Johnson, everybody. The name of the book is Facing Forward, a memoir about choices, intuition, and insight in a show-busy life. I encourage you to go get the book. We have a link in the description of this program. Go ahead and pick it up today. You know, today is May the 4th. Of course, May the 4th be with you. It is Star Wars Day. Yesterday was Paranormal Day. So I'm going to put the two together real quick before we leave you today and give you 20 things only true fans know about Force ghosts. How does that sound? A little extra something for your Thursday before we leave you today. Believe it or not, only light side Force users are able to project a Force ghost. I know, it's a nerd thing. It's true. This kind of force or focus requires a calmness of mind that is only available to those who know how to use the light side of the force. You can't be on the dark side and be able to project a force ghost. So you won't see the Emperor project a force ghost. And believe it or not, you won't see Han Solo project one unless he was a Jedi. And he was the one on the light side at that. But it does mean that we might see Princess Leia if there's one or a sequel outside of canon, or if we see her in the TV series or in a TV series outside of episode 9. So there you go. I know I'm getting all geeky about stuff. But in the official Star Wars canon, only Jedi or practitioners of the light side of the Force are able to project Force ghosts. Ordinary people without the Force, or even good guys, are unable to do it. It seems like the actual projection of an identity, a form, and a voice from beyond the veil require a significant amount of focus. So unfortunately, we won't be seeing a Force ghost of Han Solo anytime soon unless he was secretly practicing the Force. However, unfortunately, we will also never see the luminous version of Jar Jar Binks either. I know you're all just ducking your heads and wishing we could see Jar Jar one more time. We think most fans would call this a win. Anakin received a crash course on Force ghosts when he passed away. That's what it says in this headline. If only practitioners of the light side of the Force and Jedi can become Force ghosts, then how did Vader earn the same privilege after he passed away? In one of the original versions of the Return of the Jedi script, Yoda explains that if Darth Vader passes and never turns to the light side, then his identity and consciousness will fade away forever. Yikes. However, if he turns to the good side, he will pass through the netherworld first, and then Yoda and Obi-Wan have a chance to rescue him and teach him how to project a Force ghost from the other side. Notably, Vader's Force ghost appeared as young Anakin, the good version he identified with, before he passed away. Number three, some Force ghosts can wield Force powers. It's true. In The Last Jedi, of course, we see Yoda return as a Force ghost. When Luke threatens to burn down the Force tree, Yoda's Force ghost does him one better by summoning lightning to strike the tree before Luke can get to it. This was a rare time when we see Force ghosts actually use the Force to influence the physical world. So why didn't Force ghosts intervene during key moments like when Luke confronted Vader? There seems to be an unwritten law about Force ghosts being unable to interfere too much with people confronting their own destiny. As Obi-Wan once said to Luke, if you choose to face Vader, you will do it alone. I cannot interfere. So it makes at least a bit of sense that Yoda could burn down the Force tree, as it did not affect anyone's destiny. Interesting, huh? Sith are unable to become Force ghosts. It's true. The Sith never learned how to be Force ghosts and are seemingly unable to. It may be that the focus on passion, anger, and power is not enough to project a Force ghost. As Qui-Gon's Force ghost put it, it is a state acquired through compassion, not greed. After the Emperor was thrown down a shaft in The Return of the Jedi, his life energy dissipated in a massive blast of bluish-white light. One Sith Lord, a mysterious voice known only as the Presence, was also able to bind her own energy and part of her identity to a Sith holocron after she passed. In Star Wars Rebels, Ezra Bridger encountered her as a voice from the holocron that attempted to lure him to the dark side of the Force. Qui-Gon Jinn learned the practice from Force priestesses. It's true. In one of the Clone Wars episodes, Yoda is deep in meditation when he unexpectedly contacts Qui-Gon's spirit as a disembodied voice. At first, the Jedi believes that Yoda is ill. Qui-Gon instructs him to escape to Dagobah, then later to a planet that is the origin of all life. It is there that Yoda meets the enigmatic Force priestesses. After Qui-Gon passed on, he picked up the Force ghost ability from the Force priestesses while in the netherworld of the Force. However, Qui-Gon's training was incomplete. He could mostly only appear as a voice unless the location was powerful in the Force. Qui-Gon leads Yoda here so that the priestesses will also train him to become a Force ghost. Yoda learned how to become a force ghost from Qui-Gon Jinn's ghost. How about that? Qui-Gon's force ghost introduced Yoda to the concept of the living force and the cosmic force and how they relate. He directed Yoda to Dagobah, where he experienced a horrifying vision of Order 66. Qui-Gon later guided Yoda to the planet of the Force Priestesses, who would complete his training by putting Yoda through a series of trials. One of Yoda's most challenging trials was facing the dark version of himself, a dark twin. Yoda at first renounces him, denying that the darkness is part of him. Dark Yoda retorts, "Know your true self, or I will devour you." After a fight, Yoda prevails, stating, "Part of me you are. Control over me you have not." The trial implies that one must know even the darkest parts of oneself in order to project a force ghost. Only force users can see a force ghost. That's right, you and I can't see them, unless you can do this stuff yourself. When Luke first experienced Obi-Wan's spirit, it was on the Death Star when he told him to run. He heard it again when speeding through the trench in his X-Wing. In both of those cases, however, he could only hear Obi-Wan and could not see him. In The Empire Strikes Back, Luke sees Obi-Wan's apparition and is finally able to reply to him and ask questions. In the new novelization of The Empire Strikes Back, Obi-Wan explains that Luke can now see him because his training in the Force has made him more advanced. At the end of the Return of the Jedi, Luke can see the Force ghosts of Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Anakin together. However, Leia cannot, even though she is Force-sensitive. With sufficient training in the Force, however, she may be able to see Force ghosts eventually. Jedi make their physical bodies disappear before becoming Force ghosts. Now, we've seen this a few times, of course. In order to become a full-fledged Force ghost, a Jedi must transmute the physical matter of their body into pure energy at the time of their demise. In nearly all cases where Jedi become Force ghosts, they will their body to disappear before passing. We see this with Obi-Wan during the final duel with Darth Vader. We see it again with Yoda, where he vanishes before his demise. Most recently, we see it in The Last Jedi when Luke disappears right after pulling off one of the most impressive Jedi magic tricks ever seen. Qui-Gon meditated before Darth Maul destroyed him, but he did not vanish. Later, Qui-Gon's spirit voice admits to Yoda that he did not complete his training, so he was unable to appear as a full Force ghost. Darth Vader's body disappeared when he became a Force ghost. It has been established that not only those who use the light side of the Force can become Force ghosts, and those who become Force ghosts must make their bodies disappear when they pass. This makes Anakin's Force ghost a bit more interesting, as he was a Sith at the time of his passing, and his body didn't disappear immediately after. However, Darth Vader turned to the light side of the Force right before he passed, becoming Anakin again. According to the novelization of Return of the Jedi, Anakin did make the organic part of his body disappear underneath his suit. This means that later, when Luke burned Darth Vader's body on a funeral pyre on Endor, he was really only burning the suit. In effect, this means that he was not actually cremated, but the suit, as a symbol of evil, was burned away. Force ghosts can influence solid objects. Though they seem transparent and not solid, Force ghosts can indeed influence physical objects. Yes, sometimes they wield force powers as ghosts, but they can also do simple things to interact with the physical world. For example, they can walk on solid ground or sit down on a solid log or a rock, as both the Force ghosts of Yoda and Obi-Wan do. They can also choose to be under the influence of the same gravity as living beings. In the Clone Wars, when Qui-Gon first appeared to Yoda as a voice, he blew out all of the candles in the room and lifted Yoda into the air. Most of the time, however, Force ghosts appear to be motivated by a desire to simply communicate wisdom to the living. Force ghosts cannot be harmed by the living. Once a Jedi passes into the afterlife and comes back as a Force ghost, there's nothing in the physical world that can harm them. They exist as an apparition that is one with the living Force. Only Force users can see Force ghosts, so it is conceivable that if all Force users are wiped out, there would be no one left to affect any Force ghost. However, even then, the Force ghosts would not be harmed. They would just be unseen and unheard. However, a total extinction of Force users is highly unlikely. A generation after Order 66 was executed, new Force users are popping up all over the galaxy. We can see that there are still many Force users in the recent movies. However, Kylo Ren and Rey are powerful with the Force, and we also see young children who also show signs. Becoming a Force ghost is a skill, but not every Jedi becomes one. If every Jedi became a Force ghost, they would be everywhere. Let's face it, you'd see them in every corner. In the Star Wars Expanded Universe, there are several sources that explain that becoming a Force ghost is an ancient discipline that became lost over the millennia before it was rediscovered. In the modern Star Wars universe, we do not know if this is still canon or not. What is known is that Yoda had no idea that this was possible until Qui-Gon contacted him from the afterlife. If Yoda didn't know, then it's almost certain that the rest of the Jedi Order didn't know either. Because of this, everyone who perished around the time of Order 66 will probably not be returning. Favorites like Mace Windu, Ki-Ad Mundi, and those poor younglings will not come back as spirits, as they likely never learned how to. Obi-Wan learned how to become a Force ghost from Qui-Gon Jinn's ghost. At the end of Revenge of the Sith, Yoda told Obi-Wan that he would teach him how to speak with Qui-Gon's spirit. After Order 66, Obi-Wan went into exile on Tatooine, keeping watch over young Luke from a distance. Obi-Wan had years to further develop his Force abilities and the new training that Yoda had provided him with. According to The Rise and Fall of Darth Vader, it was here that Qui-Gon appeared to Obi-Wan, imparting him with many lessons. One of the things that Qui-Gon specifically told him involved Darth Vader and how he would never again set foot on Tatooine. He also told him that Luke would eventually confront his father. It is heavily implied that Obi-Wan learned some of the secrets about how to become a Force ghost from Qui-Gon. Now, the appearance of a Force ghost varies. Some Force ghosts look exactly as they did before they perished. However, the appearances of other Force ghosts will vary. Darth Vader's ghost appeared as his young, uninjured human form. In the original version of Return of the Jedi, though, he looked the same age as when he perished, but he appeared as a healthy man who didn't need a suit. Later, Lucas retconned his element so that he appeared as his younger self before he turned to the dark side. Some Force ghosts appear with injuries that they had in life, even though they cannot technically be injured as a ghost. Sometimes they appear as a milky blue apparition. Other times, though, they appear in full color as if they're still alive with just a slight glow around them. The form that they reappear as seems to be connected to the form that they identified with before their passing. Force ghosts can pass through solid objects. Force ghosts aren't bound by the traditional rules of space and time. They can seemingly appear wherever they want at will, whether it be beside a speeding X-Wing fighter or on a remote icy planet. Similar to most mythological ghosts, they are mostly intangible and can pass through solid objects. Theoretically, they wouldn't necessarily have to walk through a wall to get to another room. They could just appear there if they wanted to. They also seem to have the choice to be partially solid, or at least have the illusion of being solid. For example, they can walk on the ground or sit on the surface. However, if one were to throw an object at a Force ghost, well, it would simply pass right through them. They are just spirits, after all. Instead of walking, some Force ghosts hover or drift. Oh, that can be kind of scary. Much like our ghosts here on Earth. Physical movements aren't the same for Force ghosts. While walking may seem second nature even as a spirit, Force ghosts can drift or hover if they choose to. For example, Obi-Wan appeared to hover slightly above the ground when he appeared to Luke on Hoth. Also, there was room for someone in Luke's X-Wing cockpit during the Battle of Yavin, so Obi-Wan was probably hovering slightly above him. Should a Force ghost want to scare someone, they could easily make themselves hover about the room and act intimidating. However, this would go against the nature of Force ghosts, as they usually appear in order to provide another Force user with wisdom, not to make themselves scary. Force ghosts can bind themselves to a living person as a guardian spirit. much like a spirit guide of the Force, so to speak. After his demise, Obi-Wan reappeared as a Force ghost in order to help Luke. Some might even say that he took on the role of a guardian angel, or a spirit guide. This is common. The reason why most Force ghosts appear in the first place is to provide guidance or wisdom to the living. Sometimes they even help with training, as Qui-Gon's Force ghost did with Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan's Force ghost helped Luke destroy the Death Star that threatened the entire galaxy. He also directed Luke to train with Yoda and warned him against confronting Darth Vader before he was prepared. When he felt that Luke was ready, he finally revealed Luke's true parentage and confirmed that Leia was his sister. Obi-Wan behaved much like a wizard or fairy godmother. That's kind of a weird way to describe Obi-Wan. Giving key pieces of advice to Luke so that the hero could prepare for his journey. Force ghosts are created through the interaction of the living force and the cosmic force. Obi-Wan Kenobi explains the force as an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. This is all true, but it is only part of the story. As the spirit voice of Qui-Gon explained to Yoda on Dagobah, "I am a manifestation of the force. A force that consists of two parts. Living beings generate the living force, which in turn powers the wellspring that is the cosmic force." Qui-Gon goes on to say that all energy from the living force, from all things that have ever lived, feeds into the cosmic force, binding everything and communicating to us through the midichlorians. "Because of this, I can speak to you now. Therefore, it is the living who empower those who have passed to live on as a spirit." Force ghosts can also manifest as voices. We know this for quite some time. We've known it since the very first Star Wars movie. Some characters are only able to hear Force ghosts. However, this is due to several reasons. The first is that the Force user listening is not sufficiently trained to view a full apparition, and therefore can only hear the voice. The second possibility is that the now deceased was not sufficiently trained in the discipline of projecting a Force ghost from the afterlife, as was the case with Qui-Gon's spirit voice. The third possibility revolves around the fact that a Force ghost can choose to communicate as a voice. This might come in handy if one is talking to a pilot who needs to stay focused in combat. Even if Luke had the capability of seeing a full Force ghost in A New Hope, Obi-Wan would have probably preferred to appear as a voice in the cockpit, because you can't hit that little exhaust port if Obi-Wan's going nee-nee-nee-nee-boo-boo in front of you, you know, with his thumbs in his ears and all. Force ghosts can interact with other Force ghosts. Return of the Jedi had an epic ending with the second Death Star gone and the Emperor and Darth Vader destroyed. The rebels on the forest moon of Endor held a huge celebration. Dancing Ewoks hugged the soldiers of the rebellion and played celebratory music. Luke and Leia, which, by the way, gets stuck in your head and you can never get it out of there. Luke, Leia, Han, Chewie, Lando, and the droids were all reunited. And as Luke looked into the distance, he saw the ghostly forms of his mentors and the human form of his father, also smiling with their approval. Obi-Wan's Force ghost had his hand on Yoda's shoulder, and Anakin stood next to them. The spirits can interact with one another on this plane, and all is happy. And with that, we leave you on a happy note on this May the 4th, and may the 4th be with you, and we hope you had a happy paranormal day as well. That'll do it for this episode of Darkness Radio for a Thursday. We hope you had a great week. We had a great week as well. We've got some great shows on the way for the next couple of weeks. We've got Katrina Weidman coming up in the next couple of weeks. We also have L.A. Marzulli coming up in the next couple of weeks. We'll be talking about crop circles and aliens. We've got some paranormal stuff coming up with Katrina Weidman as well. She also has a brand new single out there as well called Suffer Me. Look for it on Spotify and other places where you get your music. Want to remind you that there are people out there in need right now. When you go this weekend to go enjoy yourself in that nice weather, be sure to think about people who are less fortunate, maybe aren't having such a great time right now. Take 5 minutes this weekend to help somebody who may be in need. Do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. Remember to always be leaving things a little bit better than what you found it. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Leave things a little bit better than what you found it. That's the way we like to do things here at Darkness Radio. Also, we'd like to remind you to patronize our sponsors. HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/darkness50. Get 50% off your first order, plus get your first box shipped to you free. Also, Manscaped, Manscaped.com, and then also use the code DADVILLE. You'll get 20% off right there at Manscaped. Again, Manscaped.com, use the code DADVILLE. 20% off all the great products there, and they have a lot of great products there that you can take advantage of with that tax return that you're getting in the mail as we speak. Folks, I want to thank you so much for listening to us week in and week out here on Darkness Radio. I want to remind you as well not to sit on these programs. I know a lot of you like to binge while you're at work. You take a bunch of programs, you binge maybe while you're listening at work or on your way to work or on your way home from work. I know it's a great thing to binge, to get it all out of the way at one time. But the way that we get credit from Audio Boom and from our advertisers and get credit for not only for the listening to the show, but to keep our sponsors sponsoring us on the show and for us to make a living at doing this show is for you to listen to the show within a week or two of you getting it in your queue. If you do us a favor, if you want to keep hearing these great shows and hear them for free, we need you to listen to those shows within a week or two of you getting these shows in your queue. That's all we ask of you. For myself, for Bruiser, for Mally Fox, and for Jessica Freeberg, if you could do us that favor, we'd appreciate it. We'll see you next week. We love you so much, folks. Thank you so much for listening to this program. And we'll see you next week for the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.